Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are off and running on a Tuesday on the Daily Tip on a BetMGM Network. Time to wake up with us as we are live across the country from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. in the East. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger coming up. Jam-packed Monday night football to talk about. Bills and the Falcons, Commanders and the Bears here in D.C. We'll also talk about Game 2 of the ALCS, Game 1 of the NLCS. Plus, it's a Take Tuesday with D-Day and Double D dropping their hottest takes coming up at 6:40. And it's a Teaser Tuesday as well. Excited to hear what Chelsea has to say and what she's thinking about this week. Chelsea, good morning to you. What's happening?
Yeah, good morning. Coming off an elite Monday night where the split screen was working triple. It just feels like one of those times of year where you don't even know where to look. Because you were, you know, I don't want to say complaining, but bringing up this fact yesterday is that when we have a doubleheader on Monday night, it's difficult to choose a broadcast. Like for you, obviously, you're going to watch the Commanders. But for me, it's all about timing. It's like, okay, this one's at halftime. We're going to go to this one. Oh, this one's in a commercial break. Time to change the audio to the baseball game. So it's definitely like a game in itself. Although I am just sitting on the couch. I understand other people are doing more heavy lifting. But it's a good problem to have.
I was locked into the Commanders. And then I decided I would go to bed early. But I was still watching on my phone, just bated breath.
You sure about that?
Brutal. I've got like 2 hours sleep.
Jinx.
Oh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired. And I thought, well, I'll be tired, but it's okay. I'll come in after a dub. So it's all right, you know? I'll drink the coffee. It'll be fine. And now it's just I'm tired and sad. So was your Texas Roadhouse good? That'll make me feel better. I live vicariously for you.
Yeah, the second round was good. So, Jinx, maybe do yourself a favor. I don't know if they have Texas Roadhouse there. They probably don't. But if they do, order yourself the family feast because you deserve it, buddy, for staying up late. And I was going to say, it's even worse when you have a bet riding online and that loses too.
It's just like one kick in the pants after the other. I'm like, and the bet lost, and my team lost, and I had an overnight, and I'm tired. And then I thought, well, at least Chelsea got that family pack. That sounds pretty good. So let's talk about our bets here before we get into it. We got a busy night to recap before we get into your Teaser Tuesday coming up later. Can't wait to hear from Double D and D-Day as well. So let's get her started.
Yeah, there's nothing better than starting the day with a daytime bet that loses in like the second inning. So we had the first 5-4 in the Mariners and Blue Jays. And the Mariners led 6-3. We finally saw some semblance of offense between these two teams. And maybe that's what the number suggested. Because during the last month of the season, the Mariners had the best offense across the board in all of baseball. But, like, here's why I played it. It looked to be the best pitching matchup of the entire series. Logan Gilbert had been absolutely shoving. Same goes for Trey Savage. I even thought that, you know, the Blue Jays had an advantage for the fact that the Mariners had not seen him because he'd only pitched a few games, and he's coming off 11 strikeout performance against the Yankees in the Bronx. I did not think the spotlight was going to be too bright for him, but we saw a ton of runs in that game. As for the Dodgers in the first five money line, I feel like at least in this one, our handicap was correct. We just did not get the result that we wanted because the Dodgers decided to wait until the sixth inning to score a run. But as we predicted, Blake Snell absolutely shoved. But this game was tied at zero. So first five money line is a push for the Dodgers.
I was on both of those. Also had Bill Kroski Merritt, 50-plus rushing yards. That comes home. And Commanders money line, minus 130.
So the Commanders had it. They fumbled it away. We'll get to that game. So 0-2-1 for me to start the week. I got some work to do for the remainder of the week. As for the Dodgers, had the Dodgers in the money line. Dodgers been on a run. So early on, you're 0-1-1. I'm 0-2-1. And the Dogster 1-0 here on the Daily Tip on a BetMGM Network. It is great to have you with us on a Tuesday morning, regardless of whether your team's won or lost. We'll get through it together. And we begin in Atlanta, where the Falcons stunned the Bills. 24-14, Falcons getting 4 points. The Falcons plus 180, total set at 50, the under hits. And what a performance from Bijan Robinson.
A first and five. Robinson off the right side, breaks free. Bijan Robinson spinning down the sideline, still going. Can they catch him? They cannot. Touchdown, Falcons, 81 yards.
It's Chris Fowler on ESPN. Bijan, a career-high 170 yards on the ground, makes six catches for a career-high 68 yards. So, all in all, 238 yards from scrimmage, also a personal best. Drake London, 10 catches, 158 yards and a score. And how about the Falcons' defense? Frustrating Josh Allen as the reigning MVP goes only 15 of 26, 180 yards, two touchdowns, two picks. Chelsea, the Bills have lost two straight. The Patriots have the lead in the AFC East.
And the Patriots actually look like they're playing good football, and they get to play my Titans next. So it feels like an automatic dub for them. As for the Falcons, they had a couple weeks to prepare for this game, and it showed. This shows that Raheem Morris is a good head coach. Like, this is what you expect from good head coaches, is that they take that extra time and they game plan. And I understand Josh Allen is a huge challenge to defend, and honestly, I wasn't sure if the Falcons could do it, because coming into this game, the Falcons had all these great defensive numbers when it came to defending the pass, but they hadn't really faced somebody like Josh Allen before. So this was a true test for the Falcons to show if this defense was for real, and they absolutely answered the call. As for the Bills, we knew they already had problems defending the run, but you can't give up a buck 70 to Bijan Robinson. I understand Bijan Robinson's a really good player. Even after the game, Raheem Morris said that Bijan Robinson is the best player in the NFL. I don't know about that, but I would say he's probably in the top 10. But the defensive problems have always been there for the Bills. They have not been good at stopping the run, but the offense usually is the consistent part. And we have seen real problems over the last two games.
Yeah, the Bills have some work to do, and Sean McDermott said as much after the game, said we're going to use the bye week as a reset, and they really need to. Josh Allen now has three picks in his previous four games, and then the Bills' defense, which has kind of been a question mark all year, can the Bills overcome what is probably their biggest weakness? They allowed 335 yards in the first two quarters alone. And this is a good Falcons offense, which can carve you up, especially with the extra time. The one thing about the Falcons is they've always had the individual parts, but they've never quite been able to sort of put it together where they're explosive on a regular basis. They were great last night, where everyone was just feasting. And now Buffalo looks like a team that, kind of just like Sean McDermott said, we've got to reset, because the last 2 weeks haven't inspired a lot of confidence. And if you look at the early season results for Buffalo, they beat up on some bad teams. So, you know, here we are, week six in the books finally, and now there's some question marks about the Super Bowl favorite.
Oh, absolutely. But to be fair, don't we have questions about everybody in the NFL this year? It just feels like there is no team that is flawless. And sometimes it's just going to be like that in the NFL, because there is a ton of parity. I'll say this, if you do like the Bills, maybe you could get some value on them, because I think they were like maybe 4-1 yesterday to win the Super Bowl. Now they're up to 6-1. They are still your favorites, the Chiefs plus 650. But maybe you can get some value on them. But I will say this, the Patriots are trending at the right time, and I feel like that division is far from won by the Bills.
No, it's going to be a battle now. And, you know, it's one thing to have weaknesses, but the Bills suddenly, just out of nowhere, look like they have some serious issues that they've got to rectify. Fortunately for them, they have a bye week coming up. The Falcons visit the Niners on Sunday Night Football. Right here in D.C., the Bears edge the Commanders 25-24. The Bears getting 5.5. Bears 2-1 on the money line. Total set at 49 and a hook, so the under hits by a half point. Last year, Washington won this game against the Bears with a Hail Mary. Not on a rainy Monday night. DeAndre Swift terrorizes the Commanders. 14 carries, 108 yards on the ground. Catches two passes for 57 yards. Washington with a chance to win this game. Just more than 3 minutes to play, leading 24-22, but on a 3rd-and-1, slippery football. Jaden Daniels can't secure the snap when trying to hand off to Bill Kroski Merritt. So it is a fumble. The Bears take over. They drive down the field, and it leads to this.
Snap a bit high. Kick is good. And the Bears win it. Jake Moody, a hero tonight.
He certainly was. Caleb Williams throws for 252 yards and a score. And the Commanders defense, if we're talking about defenses that have work to do, the Washington defense gave up a lot of yardage on the ground, some big plays when they shouldn't have. And also, this is a real heartbreaker because if the Commanders convert that 3rd-and-1 with just more than 3 minutes to play, they probably go on to win this game. Instead, the field flipped and they take the L.
Yeah, but I feel like we need to talk about the Bears for a second because I feel like now the takeaway for me is that the Bears are no longer a soft football team. Wasn't that kind of the case last year where it felt like if anything went wrong, this was a team that could not recover? Now you see Caleb Williams really locking in the final minutes of games because it's been back-to-back weeks with close finishes for the Bears, and they don't just pee down their legs. So last year we saw this game, you know, signal a downturn for the Bears, and now it truly feels like we are feeling the presence of Ben Johnson as head coach, and the culture's starting to change for the Bears. So I think it's, if you're a Bears fan, it feels like for the first time in a while that you have something good to look forward to on the horizon. I understand people were super excited about Caleb Williams last year, but it just felt like a team that had some parts. But like you said about the Falcons, they hadn't just put it all together, and they didn't feel very resilient. Now this feels like a Bears team that can win football games in the final 2 minutes.
The interesting thing about the Bears is sort of the progression of Caleb Williams, because when you talk about the tools on that offense, okay, they have DeAndre Swift, and then they have a guy like Cole Kmet at tight end. They have DJ Moore-Romadunze. So there are definitely talented athletic players on that offense, but why haven't they been able to reach that potential? And generally it's because Caleb Williams has always tried to do too much, right? It's like Tom Brady says, you know, greatness is boring. Sometimes you have to do the little things, and then you step up and you make that Superman play. You show off that big arm when you need it. And Caleb Williams early in his career tried to make every play with his arm, and sometimes his feet wouldn't be set, wouldn't get down the field the way he needed to, because he was trying to win every game simply with his arm. And he could do that in high school. He could do that in college. You can't necessarily do that in the NFL. And that's the one imprint I feel like Ben Johnson has put on Caleb Williams, which is you don't have to do it all on every play. When it's your time, when you need to make a play, you've got the talent to do it. You just kind of have to put the governor on yourself and sort of be judicious. And I feel like we're seeing more and more of that from Caleb Williams, where he's not making those egregious mistakes trying to throw it down the field.
Right, and that just comes with learning. And last year, you know, he was a rookie, so it's going to take some time for him to learn that. But for me, it feels like the culture is different as well, because wasn't it in the Commanders game last year where they had, like, these egregious penalties from other guys that kept the game in play? So, like, it feels like we don't see that anymore from the Bears. And, like, maybe it's, you know, it's only October. I'm sure they could, you know, pee down their legs if they really wanted to later in the season. But it just feels like it's a more disciplined team.
Well, if you're talking about egregious, how about everything we've seen from the Titans this season? They finally made a move yesterday.
God.
Your Titans.
I wasn't ready for that.
Everybody's getting an L this morning. I don't care how it comes. Titans fire head coach Brian Callahan. I mean, we sort of knew this was coming, right? His NFL tenure ends with a record of 4-19. Titans go 1-5 this season, losing by an average of a little more than 15 points per game. What I loved about this is Adam Schefter, when he tweeted it, normally there's some sort of context, and here it was so expected. He was like, Titans fired Brian Callahan. Just move along. He's done.
We knew this was coming. Like, he was not doing a good job, and I think the worst thing was the Titans were not improving. And last year you could point at Will Levis and be like, Will Levis is terrible. Now you have Cam Ward, who actually shows signs of possibly being a good quarterback, and now we're driving him into the ground. And you have a coach that doesn't know the rules of the game. Like, in back-to-back games, when you don't know the basic rules of football, you should not be a head coach in this league. And I also feel like the Titans did not want to be curb-stomped by Mike Vrabel next week, with Brian Callahan, like actually the head coach, they want to say, oh, well, we had an interim head coach. It's a rebuilding time for us, because we all know the curb stomping is absolutely coming next week.
Who are they going to hire? Who are they going to bring in to lead this Titans team? You listen to a lot of sports radio. Have they bandied about any names yet? Or is it just, well, we'll promote someone on an interim basis. We'll kind of see how it goes. We'll do a full coaching search. I haven't heard anything. It's sort of a wasteland right now. And as you know, the Titans have made a lot of moves in the front office with their head coaches. So there's been a lot of moving parts. It's not exactly the most attractive job right now. Got Cam Ward, though.
Well, the thing is, they didn't even name an interim until hours after they announced the firing. So I feel like the Titans don't even know.
They probably
like, don't. I guess we'll look.
Who are we going to hire? I don't know. I mean, we got a whole season. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Going next on the show, how about some baseball? The Mariners taking a commanding lead in the ALCS, plus the Dodgers and Brewers begin the NLCS in Milwaukee. Baseball coming up next on the Daily Tip. Good morning to you here on the BetMGM Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on a my God, look at my voice.
We're back on a Tuesday. Welcome back.
That's what happens when you have 2 hours sleep. Team loses the stroke of midnight. Coming up on the show, the Mariners continue their quest for the first World Series appearance in franchise history. Just have an update for you, and it's not a good one on my end. We all know the ghost story at my home. Quick refresher. A couple years ago. Yeah. So everyone knows, well, not everyone. I'll refresh this real quick. So, in our condo, it is verified, numerous sources, a guy hung himself before he moved in, which goes to the idea that we believe, and I had an FBI agent who used to live next to us, Jane, and she's like, yeah, we sort of feel like there was a Russian spy who used to live in your place. The guy who was there, the duo, the husband, definitely hung himself. I'm like, okay, that's great. So a couple years ago, the fan in our bedroom where he hung himself would randomly start going, just starting out of nowhere. And it was kind of creepy. And it kept happening. And then I had a pen, which I lost, a vape pen, suddenly appear on just right in front of the sink in the bathroom. Like days this thing was lost, it just appears one morning. Some weird stuff, but mainly with the fan, right? So I finally said to the ghost back in the day, hey, sorry this happened to you. I know I sound crazy. I hear how crazy I sound. So I say, hey, sorry this happened to you. You're welcome to stay, but you got to cut this out with the fan. Like, you have to cut it out. It stopped. This is 2 years ago. Saturday morning, the lovely Catherine and I wake up, laying in bed, getting ready to get out of bed. And I go, hey, remember when we had that ghost here? And she goes, hey, ghost. And I'm like, oh, don't do this. She's like, hey, ghost. If you're here, start the fan. Start the fan. Nothing happens. However, Sunday night, this has not happened in 2 years. Sunday night, I crawl in bed. It's kind of chilly outside. I snuggle up, about to go to bed. All of a sudden, I feel this chill. I'm like, oh my God, fan is going crazy. Absolutely crazy. I'm like, has Catherine been in here? I look for the remote. The remote is in a box on like our chest of drawers. I'm like, well, you just hit the button to start the fan. Nobody touched this. I turn it off. I lay back down. Fan starts again. I'm like, okay, maybe this remote is messed up. Turn all the lights on. Check the fan one more time. I turn it off. Watch it stop. I'm like, okay, the fan has stopped. I have the remote in my hand. I'm going to bed. I put the remote next to me on the nightstand. I lay down, head on the pillow. Thing starts at full blast again. And I finally go, all right, I get it. You can still do it. That's awesome. But you got to cut this out again, please. Stopped. And that's it. Hasn't happened since. So I don't know if I'm crazy, but I don't think it's a coincidence that the lovely Catherine said something, called it out, and immediately this problem starts up again. Really kind of freaked me out, I have to say.
It's crazy to me that all it took was like some discipline where you're like, hey, don't test me. So all you have to do is parent the ghosts. You know, maybe other people across the nation who are having ghost issues just need to learn how to discipline their ghosts. You got to keep it in check. You got to tell it's who's boss.
Yeah. I'm being kind. I'm like, this is your place before it was mine. You can hang around. It's cool. Knock yourself out. But you got to stop this fan. And sure enough, and I told the lovely Catherine last night, I said, hey, you got to just don't call out the ghost anymore. I can't believe I'm having this conversation with you, but do not do that again. Because by the third time, I was kind of getting weirded out. Like, okay, this is really, really weird. But everything is A-okay now. We'll wait and not call it out for another couple years. Instead, we focus on the more positive things. The real live people playing baseball in the ALCS. How about the Mariners taking care of the Blue Jays last night? 10-3. Mariners plus 115 on the money line. Total set at 7.5. It is the over that hits, and the Seattle bats with a power surge.
Shot to right center field. Varsho on the run. He's at the track. He's at the wall. It's gone! It's Polanco again! Jorge Polanco is owning October for the Mariners. He's given them a 6-3 lead.
Call courtesy of Fox, Polanco, and Julio Rodriguez, each with 3-run home runs. Josh Naylor adds a 2-run shot. Treya Savage, we were on the under. Brilliant. Last time out for the Yankees, or against the Yankees, but it gives up 5 earned in just 4 innings. The Blue Jays with just 6 hits on the night, and once again, Seattle will not be denied.
Absolutely. Seattle feels like they're absolutely peaking at the right time, especially in a night where it wasn't really a huge night from Cal Raleigh. So it's the other guys in the lineup, including Jorge Polanco, who has been huge for this Mariners team. And he's not one of their bigger names, or at least not to the casual fan. But it was everybody who was feasting in this one. Feels like just about everybody had a hit, and that's kind of the case when you score 10 runs. But this is really the potential that we expected from the Mariners, because this was one of the best offenses in baseball coming into the postseason, and now we're finally starting to see it, because they played in a bunch of close games. Now they're starting to widen that lead, and to do what they're doing with this pitching staff as well. Because remember, going back to the Tiger series, they had to go 15 innings and use a ton of arms. So that wasn't even that long ago. Was that a few days ago? So the fact that they have patched together all of these guys who will throw in a couple innings, because Logan Gilbert only went 3 innings in this game, it is damn impressive what the Mariners pitching staff is doing as well.
Yeah, it goes 3 innings, and then the Seattle bullpen comes in and gives up a single hit. So you talk about complete team effort. I don't want to use too much hyperbole here, but the Mariners kind of have that feeling like they're kind of a team of destiny a little bit. Am I leaning into some low-hanging fruit here? Like, oh, they're up 2-0. Now I'm going to tell you they're a team of destiny. But it feels like they've come out of nowhere. Cal Raleigh had a season that no one could have anticipated. They're kind of playing with house money because they've never played in a World Series, never won a World Series game, and here they are. They just keep finding ways, and now everyone is coming around to the idea, oh, Seattle has all the tools to win the whole thing.
Right, and now they have a 2-0 series lead with both wins coming on the road in a really hostile environment. I don't think that you're making things up. I think a lot of it has to do with Cal Raleigh and the season that he's had. And, you know, the fact that the Mariners have kind of been like the little brother to the Astros over the past few years, where it feels like they've been going toe-to-toe with the Astros at the end of the season, but then the Astros win, like, the final game. Or they beat them, you know, in the first round of the playoffs. So now it's the Mariners' turn, finally, where we're not seeing the Astros even in the postseason. And the Mariners are running with it. So what a season. It feels like it's been a pent-up thing for these fans who have been waiting and waiting and waiting. And obviously, I don't want to call a series before it's done, because this one goes 7, right? ALCS is always 7 games.
Sure does.
So it's certainly not over. You know, the Blue Jays will have a chance, but it is definitely very hard to win a couple games on the road and make this a series.
Yeah, pretty special when you look back. It's going back a long way, but imagine the Ken Griffey Jr. days where you think, I mean, they were so close and so many times, and you go through seeing a, you know, a Hall of Fame player, one of the greatest players to ever suit up, and you don't get it done there. But here you are now with the big dumper, a completely different player, and this pitching staff, which can be really good as well. So things thus far looking great for the Mariners. And by the way, having a 2-0 series lead in a 7-game series means you go on to win about 87% of the time if you look at previous history in baseball. So things looking good thus far for Seattle. Game 3 set for Wednesday night in the Emerald City. Mariners currently a minus 135 favorite. How about this game last night where the Dodgers and the Brewers in Game 1 of the NLCS. Dodgers minus 150 on the money line. Total set at 7.5. The under hits. Last year's World Series MVP gets LA going early.
Freeman, a high fly ball to right. It is deep. Back on it. Cheerio! And Freddie Freeman sends one out of here. A rainmaker to right field. And the Dodgers strike first.
Call courtesy of TBS. That makes it 1-0 Dodgers. Meanwhile, Blake Snell, just unbelievable. Eight full innings against the Brewers. Gives up a single hit, strikes out 10 batters. Caleb Durbin, the only base runner that Snell allows, and he picks off Durbin at first base after a single in the third. And then, Chelsea, I'm sure you saw this, an absolutely bizarre double play in the fourth inning. An 8-6-2 double play. Bases loaded. Sal Frelick makes a juggling catch off the wall, bounces off his glove against the wall, into his glove again. Not a catch. The Dodgers thought it was, so the runners tagged up. That allowed William Contreras to get the force out at home and third, and that was one of those plays where, you know, you just never see anything like that regular season or in postseason baseball. Kept the Dodgers off the board, but all they needed was two because of Blake Snell.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this might be one of Blake Snell's best performances of his career. The fact that he went eight innings in this game, and think about it. Like, if you know Blake Snell, you know he has great strikeout stuff, but he's not somebody who normally goes deep in games. And the fact that you have, like, a wobbly Dodgers bullpen that was not asked to do much in this game, that is a huge sigh of relief for the Dodgers, who got to save some arms in this game, and they got a win on the road. Because Blake Snell, even going back to the year that he won the Cy Young, like, some of the questions for him winning it were he didn't pitch enough innings, because he's normally somebody who's only 5-6 innings. So to go 8 in this game was a huge deal for Blake Snell in particular.
He becomes the first pitcher to face the minimum through 8 innings in a playoff game since Don Larsen's perfect game in the 1958 World Series. His .86 ERA over 3 outings. Second best for a Dodgers left-hander since Sandy Koufax, who had a .38 ERA over 3 starts in the 1965 World Series. So he's not just having a great postseason, he's having an historic postseason, and this is exactly why the Dodgers brought him in for games like this where, okay, yeah, he's banged up early on in the season, but once he got right, and he really got right near the end of the season and during the playoffs, he's just been untouchable.
Right, and the fact that he did this with no walks,
yeah,
that's a big deal for Blake Snell, too, because normally he is somebody who kind of labors through strikeouts. I know it's still strikeouts, but, like, his line in this game, I think, was 2.5 walks. Like, I remember looking at all of his props, and he's normally somebody who will pitch around some batters, and that's fine. So to do 8 innings with no walks is always a big deal, but especially, again, for Blake Snell, it just feels like he's reaching another level.
When you saw that 8-6-2 double play, thankfully, if you're the Dodgers, you won 2-1. But had they lost 3-2, 4-2, that play, that double play, would have been critical to the final score. And I have to say, in real time, it would have been really difficult to know that that wasn't a catch in center field. If you're watching the way the ball went off Frelick's glove, then against the wall, back into his glove, it looked like he caught it. So the Dodgers, you know, tagged up, and then you realize, oh, my God, he didn't catch it. That was, I don't want to say it was unfortunate. It's just such a bizarre play that you never see. It was hard to react right there in the moment.
Right. I think it's one of those plays that's very easy to, like, sit on your couch and be like, oh, we should have done this. But no, yeah, in the moment, it's really difficult. And I think that one was one of those plays that could have gone either way. So sometimes it's just tough, especially when runs are so important and base running is so important that obviously you want to get a jump. You can't get ahead of yourself, obviously. So, like, I don't fault them there. But, like, obviously it didn't end up mattering in the end. And the Dodgers won the game anyway.
Game 2 tonight in Milwaukee. Dodgers a minus 125 favorite. I saw this tweet after this double play. I mean, this is so bizarre. And this is from Sicko's Committee on X. And it says, some grandpa with a scorecard is having the best night in a while. Just trying to figure out just exactly how this goes. I feel like you, this is just a guess, but I feel like you are someone who could keep score, you know, with a scorecard.
No.
Really?
I like hate writing things down. Like, I'm somebody who does everything on my phone. And I remember there would be girls who, when their husbands would pitch, they would do this. And they would track every single pitch that he threw, and they would keep a box score. And I'm like, those are the true heroes of this game, because I feel like it is definitely a lost art. Like, people definitely don't do this as much anymore. I feel like it is a way to keep, you know, tabs on the game if you want to stay locked in. But I feel like you don't really need to do that in the postseason. Like, postseason, I'm pretty locked in. In a regular season game between the Rockies and the Marlins, maybe, but not in these games.
Man, I'm bummed. I used to be able to do this and did do this on a fairly regular basis when I was growing up, because baseball just dominated our existence. I grew up in a small town in West Texas, so everybody was football-oriented. But until everyone could play football, it was baseball, baseball, baseball. And so, you know, all of my friends were into the sport. I collected baseball cards. I could keep score. My stepdad could keep score as well. And I kind of hate that I got away from it, because that is, it really is a lost art. And it's not, I don't want to say it's hard to do, but it's definitely a learned skill.
Yeah. My dad never liked baseball. So, like, I didn't really grow up watching baseball that much, with the exception of, like, when there were big games. Like, I remember the ALCS between, like, the Yankees and the Red Sox, when Big Poppy and that crew, you know, had that magical run. But, like, my dad didn't really like baseball. So, like, I like softball. So, like, I learned, like, keeping those type of numbers from softball, but not baseball. I didn't really get into baseball till I had to watch over 1,000 innings pitched of the guy that I am currently married to. So, Jake played a lot. So, that's why I got into baseball more. But I like softball a lot.
Okay, very good. I mean, they're adjacent, obviously, so you know you're right there.
Yeah.
You're just scratching the surface, and Jake said, hey, I mean, you're right there. Just come on over to the baseball side and, you know, let's give this a whirl, see what happens. And it worked out. Coming up next on the show, D-Day and Double D have the takes. The question is, do we agree with them or not? It is a Tuesday of the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. It is great to have you with us, so come on back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back on a Tuesday. Daily Tip on About MGM Network. Thanks for being with us. I'm Jinx. She is Chelsea. Coming up on the show, are the Buccaneers the best team in the NFC? That's just one of the things we will debate on this Take Tuesday. So you said something I thought was kind of interesting at the start of the show, which was you were watching football, and then you went back to baseball audio last night. So how exactly was your setup? I'm curious. I was just locked into Commanders, and I was checking my phone when it comes to the other games and the ALCS and NLCS, but I think I heard baseball audio in there.
Well, you know what I mean when you're on YouTube TV and you have the split screen and you can choose the audio for one of the...
Oh, okay.
So it's not like I was listening to a, like, transistor radio. Like, it was just I chose the audio for one broadcast, because obviously you can't play all of the audios at once.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I was like, that's strange. She turned on, like, Major League Baseball radio or maybe some Toronto FM station that she was locked into. I mean, you're a baseball gal, so you never know.
Right, but I definitely don't own a radio. Like, I can't say that I do. Like, I do listen to the radio in the car a lot. Like, if I'm driving, because, like, we have lives and we have to do things, And I do think of all the sports, baseball is the most or is the best equipped to listen on the radio. Like, I used to always, like, do that. I don't even know if I would say, like, growing up, but, like, in my, you know, in my 20s, I would listen to Braves baseball on the radio as I was driving home from work, and it's just relaxing.
Yeah, sometimes just, you know, if you're driving along, you can follow a game. I remember it was a few weeks ago, and I was listening to football on the radio, and lovely Catherine goes, "Do you still know what they're talking about when you're just listening?" I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Oh, wow." But, you know, you grow up listening to something or you get accustomed to it. It just sort of makes sense to you. So, yeah, I get that. All right. Glad to have that clarified. Now we got to bring in the rest of our crew to give us their thoughts on this Tuesday.
It's time for Take Tuesday. Are these takes hot?
So hot.
So hot.
Or not?
You can't handle the truth.
All right, we bring in Double D, we bring in D-Day, they give us the takes, and we say, what do we think? So we're going to start with a guy who is, well, he's like all of us. He's taking some L's this week, but that's okay. We're all in it together. I'm talking about Double D. Lost with Penn State because of James Franklin, but you got a dub last night with the Falcons.
I did. Yeah. Very happy about that. Bijan might actually be a thing. Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew? Who knew? All right, let's get started in college football. My first take. Kurt Cignetti is the best coach in college football. He will lead Indiana to a Big Ten title this season, but he will not leave Indiana for Florida or Penn State.
Well, I am going to agree and disagree here. So I am of the belief, I've kind of come around to your thinking along with D-Day as well, which is I don't think he's going to leave Indiana. It just doesn't it feel like he's at home in Indiana? Doesn't it feel like it fits his personality to say, no, I'm going to build a program here with the Hoosiers in Bloomington. Google me. Okay. So I feel like he will probably stay. It kind of feels like the right place for him. And it's never a guarantee if you leave elsewhere. I will also say I don't know if I like them to win the Big Ten yet. They're close. Are they as good as Ohio State? I mean, they went to Oregon and got it done, but I feel like until proven otherwise, I got to go with the Buckeyes who are just kind of plodding along, just being dominant on both sides of the football. So Indiana's right there, highest ranking in program history at number 3. So I'm going to say Cignetti stays, but they don't win the Big Ten.
But you didn't answer if you think he's the best coach in college football.
I think he is. Speaking. Yes, if you can reclimate Indiana, which doesn't have a history anyway, yes, you're the best coach in college football. Yes.
I definitely think he deserves to be in the conversation, but I think that question is an incomplete because we'll see what he does, you know, with the rest of his tenure, because I think we've seen this before, like maybe not to the level that we've seen with Cignetti, because taking a team that was 3-9 and not even considered a school that is a football school and taking them to 11-2 is a huge deal. Let me preface that, my statement by saying that. But I do think, you know, if you want to be mentioned as the best coach in college football, you got to win a national championship, right? Because there are current head coaches that have won a national championship. And I get it, like Kirby Smart hasn't done as much with less, but still, like you got to get to that next level. So we will see for Cignetti. I don't think that it's on cruise control by any means for Indiana, and it's just simply because Ohio State. Because Ohio State certainly has the talent on the trenches that we've seen kind of Indiana flex their muscle on the trenches on both sides of the ball against some of these teams. Like, going on the road to Oregon is a huge deal, but, like, it's still October 14th, and I'm still remembering the college football playoff first round last year. So we will wait and see when it comes to Indiana.
D-Day, good morning.
All right, guys, let's go to the NFL. Behind MVP candidate, top MVP candidate, question mark, Baker Mayfield, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the team to beat in the NFC.
Chelsea?
I think they're one of the teams to beat because I think it should be noted how impressive this all is with all of the injuries that the Bucs currently have. When Baker Mayfield is putting on these absolute clinics, throwing to his 5th, 6th, and 7th wide receivers on the depth chart, That is a big deal. Should be noted that Mike Evans might be back this week. He's back at practice. Chris Godwin is still not going to be back. Neither is Bucky Irving. And Jalen McMillan was out for that game as well. Down their both their right tackle and their right guard in that game as well. So it just makes everything that Baker Mayfield, what he is doing, even that more impressive. So it feels like a team that's perennially undervalued. So I still think that is the case. Maybe they're not the only team to beat, because over at the at BetMGM, I think they're like fifth or sixth when it comes to odds to win the NFC. Maybe that's a little unfair, but I still think like they're right on par with like the Lions and the Packers. And are the Eagles even in a discussion anymore? Like, it feels crazy to say, but they're definitely in the conversation.
Yeah, they're absolutely in the conversation. And the thing is, the schedule sets up really nicely for the Bucs. So Mike Evans is getting closer. Chris Godwin could be back in a couple weeks. We're still waiting on Emeka Egbuka. But here's the thing. I think what we're going to see here is kind of a lull for the Buccaneers based on their schedule. They get Lions, Saints, Patriots, Bills, Rams, right? So that's not necessarily an easy run. But then look at the way they finished the year. Cardinals, Saints, Falcons, Panthers, Dolphins, Panthers. Like, if they get healthy at just the right time, they can go on a run. And when you look at the NFC right now, it's completely up for the taking. I don't know how I feel about the Eagles right now. I don't think the Eagles know how they feel about the Eagles. We saw the Lions that when they face a good defense, and Tampa is particularly strong against the run, the Lions can be had. The Packers, I feel like, are almost getting credit by default because they had that one big win over Detroit but haven't done a lot otherwise. So, yeah, when you look at the top teams in the NFC, Tampa Bay is right there.
All right. Let's head to the AFC where the Steelers are not just the best team in the AFC North, but the AFC period.
No.
I don't know about that.
No. They are not. They are not. They are a team that is taking advantage, and rightfully so, of a division that sucks. A division that out of nowhere is really bad. Like, who knew? If I would have told you that the Ravens at this point, after 6 weeks, would have one win, and that the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals would be Joe Flacco, you'd be like, what? What in the world? I'd be like, yeah. That's what happened to this division. The Steelers are who they've always been, which is maybe a little bit better than we thought they were going to be, but also able to take advantage of the fact that this division has completely fallen apart. So, okay, Mike Tomlin's going to get his 500 or better season, but I don't see the Steelers being dynamic enough to be a real threat in the conference.
I also feel like it's a crowded room with a lot of teams that could certainly make some noise. Like, obviously the Bills, like, did not look great last night, but they still have Josh Allen, and I'm not completely writing them off after two losses. There is no team that looks dominant in the NFL right now. The Chiefs look like they are getting better as the weeks go on. The Colts still have some of the best numbers of any team in the NFL. Then you have, like, the Chargers and Broncos, who are both stout. So, no, I don't even think I'd put the Steelers in the top three.
Nice take, though, Double D. All right, D-Day.
All right, let's get a baseball one in here. We're in the midst of the lead-up to the pennant and the World Series. MLB and Rob Manfred are desperate for a Dodgers and Blue Jays matchup in the World Series.
They're desperate for it, but I don't think it's the best World Series matchup. Chelsea, what do you think?
I don't think they're desperate for it. Like, what? Like, they would love a New York, you know, L.A. World Series again, but I don't think they're, super rooting for Toronto. Like, because that's a different country. Like, I don't know. I feel like MLB's not rooting for Toronto. So, maybe they don't like the Mariners? I guess not. Maybe so it's East Coast, West Coast, but I don't think MLB cares that much. They want the Dodgers. That's for damn sure.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They absolutely care about the Dodgers. Major League Baseball wants the Dodgers. They want to, you know, pump up Shohei and Mookie Betts and all the incredible players that they have in that lineup. But I think, to me, and this is just personal because I'm not Rob Manfred, because I would do a good job of managing the sport, I would love to see Brewers Mariners, which I know is not sexy when it comes to television ratings and you don't have the Dodgers, but the Mariners are an awesome story. They have the big dumper. They'll be playing in their first World Series ever. And then the Brewers, I don't know if they're going to get past the Dodgers, but they play complete baseball. And I think the fact that they're playing for Uke this season, the late Bob Uecker, he's inspired them throughout the year, I think is a great story as well. And these are two franchises that have a lot of history, but I think it would be super exciting. And plus, I'm ready for some new blood anyway.
Yeah, I think everybody's ready for a new team. But I will say this, if we're talking about like storylines of the World Series, I think people want a team to face the Dodgers and beat the Dodgers. Like, don't we need like a villain in this scenario? Like, if you're thinking about like a movie or a TV series, I think the best result would be, you know, the Dodgers advancing to the World Series, but somebody from the American League taking them down. That feels like a movie to me.
Then we can all get behind that team, whoever it may be. Mm. But I don't know. Hopefully the Mariners. I really want Seattle to win the American League. Coming up next here on the show, back to the NFL we go, and Brian Branch gets his suspension from the NFL. I'm Michael Jenkins. She's Chelsea Messenger. Hour 2 coming your way here on The Daily Tip.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.